So the plan for today is, one is we want to show reduction to the case gamma identity 1 near the boundary. And the main point here is we will want a way to get from the Dirichlet to Neumann map that we were given to the Dirichlet to Neumann map in a bigger domain, omega 2. And so the main issue here will be you could call let's give it a name, let's call it the 6 Dirichlet to Neumann operators lemma. I mean, there will be 6 Dirichlet to Neumann maps in this lemma. And as this will give me a chance to mention one inverse problem other than the main one the whole course was about. So I will say application to an inverse obstacle problem. So that will be the sort of other half of the lectures. So since that's in fact more interesting than one, let me start by that. So suppose we know the, in fact, in this case, it can be anisotropic conductivity in a domain omega. I will change notation later, but so this is, I'm talking about introduction to 2. So suppose we've already done the main reconstruction that the course was about. We have found the conductivity. Of course, we don't know how to find anisotropic conductivities, but let's suppose we know the conductivity here. So you've gone to the doctor before. He has on file your conductivity. at all points in your body. And now you come back to your doctor because there's an unknown bullet in you, or pacemaker, or something. Or this could be, I don't know, let's say the earth, and you're looking for a mine. So the issue is not to find the conductivity, but to find, so let D be an unknown subdomain. All right. So what we do is we make measurements on the boundary of omega. So let U solve the conductivity equation in omega in between. You place a voltage of your choice up here. And I need to give you a boundary condition on D. One can treat all kinds of boundary conditions on D. You can treat Dirichlet, you can treat Neumann, and others. Let's just, for simplicity, so I'll just say here, this is for simplicity, and to connect to item one. Okay, but other boundary conditions can be handled by this similar method. By this approach. So as before, we place a voltage here. We have electrodes on the body. We place a voltage. And so we can measure the resulting currents between the electrodes on the surface of your body. As usual, so let's call this lambda sub d. So this is the normal component of the current. Now one often does the other thing, one often puts currents between two electrodes and measures the voltage drops on the others. But mathematically this is more elegant. And the theorem I want to prove for you is that lambda d determines d. So if you make these measurements at the surface of the body, these voltage to current measurements, And if you know the conductivity, then you can find the obstacle. This is n-dimensional. Omega is Lipschitz, D is Lipschitz. So assumptions the boundary of omega is Lipschitz. So the object doesn't have can have corners. N is bigger than or equal to 2. Pardon me? I didn't hear your question. Right. Lipschitz allows corners. Can have corners. And the conductivity which is assumed as we did before. So it's a matrix valued symmetric, positive, definite symmetric matrix. L infinity and bounded below. Well, it's a, I mean, for every D, yeah, lambda D is an operator defined on H a half of the boundary omega. We remember that it depends on D, that's all I mean. The same way that before we were writing lambda sub gamma. So, because I'm interested in the map, right? I am checking the injectivity of this map for different objects. You get a different operator. Okay. Now, so this is very general. The way this stands, so I will not stress this too much, we'll also assume gamma I J Lipschitz. So that's less smoothness that we've been assuming. I'm not sure whether this is needed or not. Yes. I'm going to show you it's uniquely determined, and then I'm going to indicate how one does this numerically. Now, the this is going to be part of a paper with Lassi, Pai, Varinta, and Ari, Teirila. So since it's still in preparation, maybe at some point I'll have to turn off the microphone. Okay, so what I wanted to show you is, let's say 10 years ago, if you had to do recovery of an obstacle, that tended to be very delicate, non-trivial mathematics. So, for instance, as I mentioned before, people were doing high-frequency asymptotics, that's geometrical optics. That's a very technical business. So in other words, you look at waves. Solutions of Helmholtz equation, let's say u is zero on the boundary, and u is like some plane wave far away. High frequency means large k. And maybe in the 70s, Andy Maida and Mike Taylor had a microlocal study of such solutions for large K, and there are various issues about glancing rays. You have Airy function time behavior. This is a very tricky business. And again, it requires you to have sometimes impractically high frequencies. So I'm doing conductivity here. As electrical engineers would call it, it's DC. The frequency is zero. So there's no question of geometrical optics here. But the surprise is that this theorem will be proved with very soft means, basically functional analysis. And that's based on some observations of Andreas Kirsch, who did this for scattering. And the crucial, or one of the crucial ingredients, happens to be this lemma, which I had done earlier, just because I wanted to move from the Dirichlet to Neumann map here to there. So I hope all this will become clearer today. All right. So we'll have a change of notation. We'll say D is omega 1 and omega will become omega 2. And you'll see that this somehow works out nicely. So now, consider the Dirichlet to Neumann map for the region omega 2 minus omega 1 closure. So I want the Dirichlet to Neumann map here. Well, we're sort of doing both. So this is for both. So I'm now going to introduce four out of the six Dirichlet to Neumann maps. So what does it mean? By now you're great experts in Dirichlet to Neumann maps. What does it mean to have the Dirichlet to Neumann map for this annular region? Well, it means I give you, so it is defined on pairs F1, F2. F1 is some voltage you place on the boundary of omega 1. F2 is, so just because the annular region has a boundary that consists of two connected pieces, one on omega 1 and one on omega 2, I can think of this map as being defined on pairs. I give you a voltage here and a voltage there. You then solve let's call it W for now, because there's going to be too many U's around. You solve this Dirichlet problem. And then we define the Dirichlet to Neumann map would be the normal component of this solution on omega 1 and the normal component on omega 2. Okay, and here we come into the first headache, which is up to now we've been talking about outer normals. So maybe let's stick to outer normals. Okay, so there's no mystery so far. I give myself a voltage on the boundary inside, a voltage on the outside, and I measure the corresponding normal components of the currents on the two boundaries. So, I don't know what to call it. Let's call it lambda for now. So lambda F1, F2 equals to this. So we can think of lambda as a 2x2 matrix of operators. Lambda 1, 1, lambda 1, 2, lambda 2, 1, lambda 2, 2. So how do I find these? If I apply lambda to some f and 0, so I just decide to put 0 voltage on the outer boundary, then only these two components matter. So how do I define this? Well, let U1 solve the conductivity equation . There's more compact notation, but that's good for papers and confusing for lectures. So pardon me for writing it all out. So U1 will be the solution, which is F1 on the inner boundary and 0 on the outer boundary. Right? So it's just the case of this W when F2 is 0. And then lambda 1, 1 will simply be the normal component of U1, of the current corresponding to U1, when you look on the first boundary. And lambda 2, 1 will be the normal component when you look off this on the outer one. Similarly, let U2 solve the same equation same place, but now U2 is F2, well, let's say 0 on the inner one, F2 on the outer, and lambda 2, 1. Sorry. So now lambda, big lambda of 0 F2 is going to be lambda 2, 1, lambda 2, 2. So lambda 2, 1 will be the normal component of this U2 current when you look on omega 1, and lambda 2, 2, normal component when you look on omega 2. What? So now I put 0 here, 0, lambda 2, 2. Yeah. So lambda 1, 1, 1, 2, 2, 1, 2, 2. 1, 2. And 2, 2. So the way to remember them is lambda ij is you input on the boundary omega j and you j and you output on omega I. So lambda 1, 1. We take F1 on omega 1, and we measure on omega 1. zero on the other side. Lambda 2 1, we take F1 and omega 1, we measure on omega 2. So output or measure. Here the input is on omega 2, and the output is on omega 1 on top, omega. Okay? So that defines four Dirichlet to Neumann maps. I need two more. You already know those. So let lambda sub 2 be the Dirichlet to Neumann map. In omega 2. In other words, sorry, 0 in omega 2, you place a voltage on omega 2. There's no obstacle inside, so no obstacle. And you measure the current, normal component, on omega 2. And lambda 1 is the same thing for omega 1. So that's the Dirichlet to Neumann map, if you wish, for the obstacle, for the inner thing. Let's call it, I don't know what to call it anymore, U tilde. U tilde on the boundary of omega 1 is F1. And then lambda 1 is the normal component U tilde omega 1. Yeah, that's no obstacle. No obstacle. Well, that's a good question. It turns out you don't really need it. However, think about how you would state the theorem. Right? If I were to say here, suppose we know the conductivity in omega minus d, then I'm telling you d. And I don't want to tell you d. So I'm just telling you I know the conductivity everywhere. And d is somehow embedded there. It turns out you don't need to know it in d. As you will see. All right, so now I need to keep everything on the board. Well, maybe not this. Okay, now we have to... There's a little mistake on the board, which has to do with the direction of the normals. So because of how I had it in the paper, I will change this normal back out. See, this one should be an outer normal. And the moment I do that, I should put a minus here on omega 1. So I should put a minus here. And I should put a minus here. Before we change to the minus signs, I want to use a basic fact about Dirichlet-Neumann maps, which we proved in the past. So I'll simply say here, with new outer normal, on the boundary of omega 2 minus omega 1, which is those two boundaries, we know the Dirichlet-Neumann map, big lambda, is symmetric. So that would say lambda 1, 1 transposed equals lambda 1, 1. Lambda 1, 2, 2 transposed equals lambda 2, 2. And this transposed equals that transposed. But now we have to be careful. So lambda which do I want? 1, 2 transposed equals lambda 2, 2. So now I have to put a minus sign here. So this is with new pointing out of omega 1. Pardon me? So, if I have an Dirichlet-Neumann map, which we've discussed usually for outer normal, so the outer normal would be like this, for this region, right? Then this is symmetric. So this, when you take the transpose, right, what's the transpose? It's lambda 1, 1 transposed, lambda 2, 1 transposed, 1, 2 transposed, lambda 2, 2 transposed, right? And this is supposed to equal that. So that means this equals this and this equals that, right? But now I've changed. I want nu to point out of omega 1. So that puts a minus on this one. It also puts a minus on that one, but that doesn't matter because... So I could have minus minus. Okay. What? Did I goof here? Yeah, yes, 2-1. Yes, very important, very important. So remark. Pardon me? Well, it's we usually took the pairing. So for transpose, I want the bilinear pairing from which pairs H one half with H minus a half. Right? So when I say this, for instance, I mean lambda 1, 1, F, G is lambda 1, 1, G, F, where F and G are in H 1 half of the boundary omega 1. This one is now in H minus a half. You pair it with something in H 1 half. Let's see what this says. So lambda 2, 1 lambda 2, 1 the input is something on omega 1. The output is something on in H minus a half of omega 2. So you take G in H 1 half omega 2. So the pairing. So when I say bilinear, I mean I don't put complex conjugates. Later on, I'll actually use the conjugate linear pairing. So this is supposed to be minus lambda 1, 2, G2, F1. So now this is in H a half omega 1, and this is in H minus a half omega 1. Okay? So remark, in this notation, we are given omega 2 lambda d becomes what? Maybe if I let you think about that, it'll give you a chance to catch up. So which of these four Dirichlet-to-Neumann maps is lambda d? Lambda 2, 2. I input on the outside and I measure on the outside. The whole point is I don't want to go in and measure inside. So the question is, does lambda 2, 2 determine omega 1? So the problem we're given this. Very good. And that. Problem. Determine omega 1. So here is the six. So now we have six Dirichlet-to-Neumann maps on the board. Right. Well, insulator is, it doesn't quite fit into this pattern. You would have to change. For an insulator, you put Neumann condition here. Right. Right. Well, an insulator has zero conductivity, right? I didn't allow zero conductivity. All my conductivities are positive definite. No, anywhere. However, I can treat insulators by changing this. Then you need to, the proof is different, but it does determine an insulator. You change this to Neumann condition. DU, DNU is zero. Okay, so the six, right? So the six Dirichlet to Neumann maps are the lambda ij's. There's four and these two. The six Dirichlet to Neumann maps lemma lambda 2 equals lambda 2 2 plus lambda 2 1 lambda 1 minus lambda 1 1 inverse lambda 1 2. So let me make a few remarks about this, and then I'll, in the next hour, I'll prove this for you. So what does this have to do with item one? Which is the main concern for the course. So let's call this star, so I shouldn't have to. I like saying six Dirichlet to Neumann maps, but it takes too many words. So star shows that given, okay, now in item one, we're given different things and we want different things. Okay? Item one is not the inverse obstacle problem. Item one, I'm giving you the Dirichlet to Neumann map here on this little domain, and I want to extend the problem to one where I know what the conductivity is near the boundary. This was to avoid the discontinuity that we talked about. Okay? So here, given lambda one, and gamma in omega 2 minus omega 1, so I know what it is from there. So from this, if I know the conductivity in the annular region, I can calculate all the four Dirichlet to Neumann maps for the annular region. So I know this, 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 therefore I get lambda 2. We can constructively obtain lambda 2. So if I know this information, I can propagate it through a known medium. It's not a big deal, but there it is. And get the information for the bigger domain. Yes, sir. Right. That we learned last time. Okay? So, let me write this, what you just said. So thus, after having determined gamma and the gamma d nu from lambda 1, as shown last time, so you measure the Dirichlet-to-Neumann map here. That tells you the conductivity on the boundary. We can extend gamma to omega 2 explicitly, well, to a conductivity W2P omega 2 known in omega 2 minus omega 1, and we can arrange gamma identically 1 near the boundary of omega 2. Then use above to obtain lambda 2, and thus this reduces the problem, the Calderon problem, to the case gamma identically 1 near the boundary. And so Q is then in LP identically 0 outside omega 2. So can extend gamma to be identically 1 outside omega 2. So now I can make it 1 here. It is now smooth. It has two derivatives. And in particular, when you take the Laplacian, you get 0 outside omega 2. Okay, so that was a technical issue. We wanted to make Q 0, but the problem is Q is already a Laplacian, so that's how I handled this. Now, since I was interested in doing everything constructively, so this step is sort of easy to prove that this data determines the Dirichlet-to-Neumann map. Takes a few lines. But I was interested in doing everything constructively. And so I obtained this formula. It just happens that the payoff is that from this formula, you can now solve the inverse obstacle problem. That's a separate problem, same formula. I should also say, suppose your domain is radial. I don't know where to put that. I'll put it here. So suppose, for simplicity, that omega 1, omega 2, are radially symmetric. So define lambda of R equal Dirichlet-Neumann map in omega of R. So the internal one. Then, so you have now a Dirichlet-Neumann map that depends on the radius. And you can ask, how does it depend on the radius? Now, I forgot to bring this, but this is a Riccati equation. That's sort of known in the business. Which means it's a differential equation where here you have the derivative and here you have something like lambda squared coming in. So star gives the explicit solution, right? So if you solve this Riccati equation, which for instance is used in layer stripping type algorithms, that allows you to, right, if you solve this ODE, it would give you a way to get from here to there. So the formula star gives the explicit solution of this Riccati equation for arbitrary geometries. So you can think of the Riccati equation as the infinitesimal version of this. This tells you how to go by chunks from lambda 1 to lambda 2. And the geometry of the intervening domain, so they don't have to be radial anymore, is built into these Dirichlet-Neumann maps. So that's sort of a side remark for the interested reader. All right, so. So thank you for the correction. Apparently I misspelled Ricati. It's supposed to be two C's and one T. Just one. Thank you. All right. Yeah, that's a very good point. So typically, yeah, it's a constant and it's unknown. So that would be a better physical. So that would be the situation when you have a perfect conductor D. I haven't done that, so I don't know. Yeah, but you don't know C. The proper way to say it, U is constant unknown. In other words, if D is a perfect conductor, then the potential is constant throughout D, but it does whatever it wants to do. So it's worth thinking about, but I haven't. Okay, so for the proofs, we need the definition of these Dirichlet to Neumann maps in terms of weak solutions. It's something we've done before.
Is it true that if I separate the body, let's just divide boundary to it would be symmetric?
That's a good question. We could look at this. Let me since I don't have infinite time left in the course, let me get this done and then we'll. But it's a good question. In any case, it's not a deep question, or I should say the answer is not deep. So this you don't have to take my word for it. This you can just write down the definitions and you'll see it's symmetric. So what are the definitions? So for instance, lambda 2 2 I'm going to quickly do an integration by parts, but again, this is just to guide us. The result will be basically the definition of lambda 2-2. So suppose you have a V gamma grad U2 omega 2 minus omega 1. So on the one hand, this is equal to V times nu gamma grad U2 minus V nu dot gamma grad U2. So what I'm going to say is let V be anything in H1 of the annular region. V on the boundary is G2. So let's call this V2. And V2 on the other boundary is 0. If V2 on the other boundary is 0, this goes away, and this becomes G2 lambda 2 2 of F2. Right? This is lambda 2 2. Inside here, this is going to be grad V dot gamma grad U2 plus V divergence gamma grad U2, which is 0. Since U2 satisfies the equation there. So this, I'll call this motivation for sufficiently smooth solutions. You have this, and that motivates us to define this to be the integral for any V2 that satisfies that. If you take another V2, what happens? Then their difference is 0 on both boundaries, and so this will be 0 because U2 is a weak solution. No. V2 is arbitrary and U2 is a solution. Oh, V2, sorry. All this is V2 here. So similarly for the other ones. So let me quickly write them down. So this would be 22, 22, 21 is, maybe I should say 12 first. So 1, 2, 1, 2. What is 1, 2? I put the data on the outer boundary, I take the normal derivative, so it's going to be a minus. V1, gradient V1 dot gamma grad U2, where V1 is G1 on omega 1, and V1 on omega 2 is 0. Then we have 1, 1. 1, 1 is G1 lambda 1, 1, F1. This is minus grad V1 dot gamma grad U1. And 2, 1 is G2 lambda F1. So now we're measuring on omega 2 V2 dot gamma grad U1. So those are the definitions of these four Dirichlet-to-Neumann maps. Dirichlet-to-Neumann maps lemma. So the proof will come in three pieces. So part A will be that lambda 2 minus lambda 2, 2 of F2 is lambda 2, 1 of something. And that something will be U restricted to where U solves the Dirichlet problem in omega 2. I think this is consistent with the notation I had before. U. It's U. U2 is 0 on the boundary omega 1. B. Lambda 1 minus lambda 1, 1 of, okay, so what is U? It's good to keep track of, not just get busy with all these identities. What is U? U says you solve the whole problem here. And here I'm restricting the answer, so the potential out there, I'm restricting it to the inner boundary. So this is a mathematical construct. I'm then going to show that lambda 1 minus lambda 1, 1 of U of this value is lambda 1, 2 of F2. And C, lambda 1 minus lambda 1, 1 is invertible. so as a map from h 1/2 into h minus 1/2 is invertible. So if it's invertible, then this value, right, so u on the boundary of omega 1 will be lambda 1 minus lambda 1 1 inverse of lambda 1 2 f 2. And if you take that, put it in here, it's precisely what we claim. So which substituted in A yields star. Okay? So once you see these, of course, all of this is completely straightforward. So how do we get lambda 2 minus lambda 2 2 of F2? Well, I'm going to use normal derivatives rather than weak solutions, just because it tells you a little more intuitively. So lambda 2 says, solve the problem for u and take the normal derivative. Right? U is the solution in the domain with no obstacle. Lambda 2 2 you do the same, but now you take the solution which is zero on the inner boundary, so this is it's equal to that. Now let W be U minus U2. Then they both satisfy the conductivity equation in the annular region. On the outer boundary, W is 0 because they have identical inputs. And on the inner boundary, U2 is 0. So the normal component of W on omega 2 right? What am I doing? I'm giving you this input on the inner, 0 on the other, and measuring on the outer. So that's lambda, start from 1, measure on 2, u on boundary 1. and that's part, that's what's claimed here. This verifies A. Okay. Now B is a little bit trickier. Because lambda 1 has to do with solutions inside the obstacle, and lambda 1,1 has to do with solutions outside the obstacle. So, let me see how I did that. Let us look at okay. Okay, so this is now B. Okay, so let V be in anything in H1 of that. Claim that lambda 2 F2 V omega 2 minus lambda 1 of U, this is the same U as before, restricted to omega 1, is gamma grad V, so it's grad V dot gamma grad U. Where? Well, in here. So, to verify the claim, extend V to V in H1 of the whole thing. Then lambda 2 F2 V on the boundary omega 2 by definition is this, and V lambda 1 of anything so this is just the definition of Dirichlet to Neumann maps. I didn't write these down today. I wrote them down in the past. Okay? This is the definition using weak solution. How do you define the Dirichlet-Neumann map? Well, it's that for any V. Everybody happy with this? If not, I'll remind you of the integration by parts that inspired this definition. Who needs to see that integration by parts? Okay. And same here. This is the outer, this is the big domain, this is the little domain, but we're taking the full domains. And now you subtract. This minus that gives you that integral on the annular region. So let's call this star star. So now we apply star star to V1. Now what's special about V1 is that it's zero on the inner boundary. And that means that the Where's V1? V1 is zero on the outer boundary. So recall, V1 on the inner boundary is G1. V1 on the outer boundary is zero. So that means that this drops out, and we get G1, lambda 1, U restricted to that equals grad V1, gamma grad U. Okay, now lambda 1, 1 So what am I trying to show? So I need lambda 1, 1 of this. What is lambda 1, 1? So on the other hand, lambda 1, 1 of this equals minus so by 11 is minus V1 gamma grad what? Well, I need a function. Let's call it W1, where W1 is supposed to be, satisfy this, W1 on the inner boundary should be U. That's the inner data. And on the outer, it should be 0. Can we think of such a function? Well, how about if we take U minus U2? Then that satisfies the equation. On the inner boundary, it's U minus 0. And on the outer, it's, right, as before. Now, why am I calling W1? So this is equal to minus grad V1 gamma grad U minus U2. So if we add these two, so add these two equations, we get G1 lambda 1 1 minus lambda 1 of U on the boundary equals minus, so it's grad V1 gamma grad U minus grad U plus grad U2. So that's equal to grad U2. And that should be lambda 1, 2. So this is G1 lambda 1, 2 of F2. So what was I supposed to show? I was supposed to show B. And here it is. So this proves B. Okay. I don't want to erase much. Okay, so to prove C, we'll exhibit the inverse of lambda 1 minus lambda 1, 1. So here I will not give you the full proof. I'll just sketch it for you. Let G I'll put Dirichlet up here of xy be the Dirichlet Green's function for in omega 2. In other words, this this is all in X here. So it satisfies the conductivity equation with a source at y. This is in all of the big domain. And we say, I call it Dirichlet because this is zero on omega 2. So suppose you put a ground wire, you put a source here at y, and you look for the corresponding voltage. Okay, so we keep it zero on the boundary. This is the Green's function. Define, let's call it script S, the single layer potential on omega 2, it wouldn't be very interesting because g is 0. So on omega 1. So this is a single layer potential on omega 1. I think of this as some boundary condition far away. So in the scattering situation, you would take the the usual outgoing Green's function, that's some condition far away. Here we're not doing scattering, we're in bounded domains, and that would be my analog, defined as SFX is the integral on W1 f of y d sigma y. So let me give you some properties. S satisfies properties of S. So first of all, you can prove S takes H minus a half into H plus a half. It's smoothing of order one. We will prove something similar next time. on a different single layer potential. Let U equal, so U of X equals SFX, X in omega 2. What can we say? Well, U satisfies the conductivity equation. In an outside so if you take a Green's function, right, and if you keep the source here, so what we're doing here is we're smearing sources on this boundary, then inside it's gamma harmonic and outside it's gamma harmonic. That's easy to see. At least formally you apply this operator, right, and the Green's function will give you a delta function, but x is never equal to y if x stays here. So the delta function will be zero. If x stays there, the delta function will be zero. U is continuous across the boundary. So if I call this u minus and u plus, the inner and outer, for single layers, they match on the boundary. So let's call this 1, 2, 3. And then there's the jump condition. So S is not continuous across the bound. The derivative of S is not continuous. We have D. X can be anywhere in omega 2. Well, if you restrict this to the boundary, so it's clear that you start in here. And then if you take this and you restrict it to the boundary, you'll get something in H a half. In fact, I believe S is in probably in H1 of omega 2. Right, it's a little singular. It's not a lot singular, but it's a little singular. And so, right. And so here, the claim is that nu dot gamma grad u minus minus grad u plus. So the jump in normal derivative on omega 1 gives you back F. So how would you say that physically? That the jump in current gives you back the charge? I think that's what it is. Okay. And so, so I should stop, but and so if you think about this, this says that lambda 1 right? Lambda 1 of SF is what? Well, you take boundary value SF, you solve the equation inside, you calculate the normal derivative. So it's just equal to this. Right? Because this function, this, that's what he was asking too. It's defined actually, the best way to think of it, define it separately for x in here, x on omega 1 boundary and inside. And that's what I call u. That is for the restriction, right, right. Okay, so now just forget about outside, just look at u minus. U minus satisfies this equation in omega 1. U minus on the boundary is equal to SF. And so by definition, lambda 1 of SF is just the normal component of U minus. What is lambda 1, 1 of SF? What are you supposed to do? You're supposed to solve this problem in the annular region with input SF here and input 0 there. But I have that. This is equal to 0 in the annular region. U plus on the boundary omega 1 is SF, and U plus on omega 2 is 0. So this is U plus. Because it's the Dirichlet-Green's function. Thank you for that question. And so what we have shown is that lambda 1 minus lambda 1, 1 of S, F equals F. So the jump condition for the single layer tells you this. Therefore, at least this difference is onto. And I will show you it's invertible. I will show you it's injective after 10 minutes from now. Thank you. So, it remains to prove lambda 1 minus lambda 1 1 is injective. Let's do that very quickly. Because your mind's arrested now, so I want to get to the other stuff. Okay, so claim lambda 1 minus lambda 1 1 is injective. We've already sketched surjectivity. This will show lambda 1 minus lambda 1 1 inverse exists, and the inverse is S. So to show it's injective, you assume it's not. So suppose, or just take, no. Suppose this F1 is 0. Okay. So let W1 solve equal to 0 in omega 1, W1 on the boundary is F1. Define W in omega 2 to be equal to this W1 in omega 1 and U1 in the annular region. Okay, so what are we doing? Here's F1. You extend F1 gamma harmonically inside, and outside you extend it gamma harmonically. Where is U1? God knows where U1 is. Outside you extend it gamma harmonically with zero on the outer boundary. So this is W minus and this is W plus. So notice that W minus on the boundary equals F equals W plus by construction. If you wish, this is U1 W plus. And the derivatives match because lambda 1, so the normal component of W minus is the normal component of W1, and that's what we call lambda 1 of F1. And the normal component of W plus is what we call, so this is normal component of U1, and that's what we call lambda 1 1. Since by assumption they are the same, right? Lambda 1 F1 equals lambda 1 1 F1. We have that, so this is a little exercise which I could assign, but I don't want to harass the poor people who've registered for the course. But it's an important point that if you have a solution inside and a solution outside of the second order operator, and if their boundary values match, and if their normal components match, then you get a solution in the whole region, in omega 2. But W on the boundary of omega 2, by construction, is 0. So this is U1. Right? And we know that implies W identically 0 in omega 2. And so in particular, it's 0 here, which is where it's F. That proves injectivity. So now we know this operator is invertible. The inverse is the single layer potential. And we have proved part C, and therefore star. All right. So that completes part one for today. So now, 2, theorem, lambda 2 minus lambda 2, 2, actually, yeah, lambda 2, 2 minus, which one do I want? I think it's lambda 2, 2 minus lambda 2 determines omega 1. So I repeat, we make measurements out here. For simplicity, boundary condition 0 here. And from these measurements, we want to determine the obstacle. And there are analogies to scattering, obstacle scattering, and so forth. Okay, so we'll write star. We'll use star. Write it in the following form. Lambda 2 minus lambda 2 equals minus lambda 1, lambda 1 minus lambda 1, 1 inverse lambda 1, 2. So I want to write it as lambda 1, 2 conjugate S. Nope, sorry. Wrong one. Lambda 2-1 S lambda 2-1 conjugate. So that takes care of the minus sign. So here's an observation of Kirsch in a different context. Take the Green's function that I've defined here. Okay? I claim y is in omega 1 if and only if the normal component of the Green's function . So that's now a function of x. I look at this function of x on omega 2. And I ask the following simple question. Here's this function. Does this function belong to the range of the operator lambda 2-1? So I remind you, lambda 2-1 takes h 1/2 of w1 of the inner boundary to h minus 1/2 of the outer. One can show it has dense range. That's actually very easy because lambda 1, 2 is injective. So we are sitting on the boundary here. There's some subspace which is dense. And we're taking this function which is explicit, and we're asking, does it belong to that subspace or not? Is this in the range, yes or no? And that's Kirsch's way of describing the obstacle. The answer is, yes, it's in the range, if the source is in the obstacle. If the source is not in the obstacle, it's not in the range. The proof is obvious. If y is in omega 1, then this Green function, oh, this is G dir, Dirichlet. It's zero in the annular region. Right? If you put the source in here, then out here you have a solution, gamma harmonic. G dir is zero on the outer boundary. And it's perfectly nice function on the inner boundary. Hence, if you want its normal component of on the outer, this is by definition lambda 2 1 of its restriction to the inner boundary. Right? How do you define lambda 2 1 of this? Right? This is some nice function here. Okay? You solve the problem, I forget what we called it, U1, which is zero outer boundary equal to this on the inner and gamma harmonic inside, and you calculate the normal derivative on omega 2. And so obviously belongs to the range. Conversely, suppose y is not in omega 1. To show this normal derivative, is not in the range. Well, suppose not. I.e., there exists U1 such that this is zero in omega 2 minus omega 1, U1 on the boundary omega 2 is 0, and the normal component of U1 right, if this is in the range, then it's lambda 2 1 of something. So now look at U1 or G dir minus U1. this is a gamma harmonic function, on the boundary, they're both, on the outer boundary, they're both zero, because the Dirichlet function is and U1 is. And their normal derivatives match. Okay, so here's the proof. Oh, I'm sorry. No, sorry. This is zero in omega 2 minus omega 1 union y. So, here's the idea, right? If the normal derivative of G is in the range of lambda to 1, that means it's the normal derivative of some nice U1. Right? So here's, and now they both satisfy the equation. They're both zero here, and their normal derivatives match. Why do they match? Because I'm saying this is in the range. So it's normal derivative of some nice U1. So by unique continuation, they have to be the same up to Y. So here, by unique continuation, G dir is U1 for X not equal to Y. So this is a contradiction, because U1 as you approach Y is nice, and G as you approach Y is not nice. G dir has a singularity at Y and U1 does not. So this shows you that if we can find the range of this operator, we can find the obstacle. Okay, so why is the problem non-trivial? Well, the issue is, let's remind ourselves, what is this obstacle? What is this operator? This operator is, you put a voltage F1 on the obstacle, right, and you measure out here. We're not allowed to do that, right? We can't get our hands inside and put a voltage out. If we did, we would know the obstacle. But the claim is that the identity star allows you to there's lots we can erase at this point. Okay, we proved star. fair proposition. And this is pure functional analysis. If B, or actually we've been calling it, I guess, A. A equals F S F star. With S a positive operator, positive bounded, then range of F is the range of A to the 1/2. So I don't have time to prove this for you today. So assuming this, we apply it to, assuming this for now, we apply it to A equals lambda 2 minus lambda 2, which are known, which are given. This is the stuff on the outer boundary. And F, square root of the operator A. Functional analysis. So since S is positive, A is positive. AFF is F It's a bounded positive operator, it has a square root. So in principle, you know that. So, and you take F to be lambda 2-1. We get the range of lambda 2-1 is the range of the square root of this. Hence, this determines range of lambda 2-1. Hence, or maybe I should say, therefore, hence, omega 1, in view of dilemma. So in the 7 minutes that remain, I'd like to answer Catherine's question about how constructive this is. So constructive So reconstruction procedure. Well, A, is turns out to be compact as an operator from where to where, as an operator from this, so as an operator, well, on H a half. Well, that's a Hilbert space, omega 2. And positive definite exists an orthonormal, that's the Hilbert-Schmidt theorem, orthonormal basis psi j of eigenvector, eigenfunctions. So A psi j equals lambda psi j, lambda j psi j. All right, so what does it mean to be in the range of an operator? So G is in the range of A means there exists an F such that, so F in the Hilbert space, such that AF equals G. Let's call this the Hilbert space we're talking about. Well, you might say, if I can diagonalize this, can't I always solve this? So write F as some F psi j expanding this basis, F and G. So AF will be lambda j psi j. So why not just define G so let the coefficients of G to be simply F to be 1 over lambda J G psi J. So I solve the equation, right? Then AF equals G. What's the one thing that goes wrong? These might not be L2 coefficients. I mean, Hilbert space, little L2 coefficients, right? So you might not be able to put together an F out of these. So G is in the range if and only if the sum G psi j squared over lambda j is finite. lambda j squared. So this is sort of a hard-nosed way of just describing the range in quantitative terms. So we've shown y is in the domain, in the obstacle, if and only if this normal derivative of g, Dirichlet, is in the range of a to the 1/2. Of the square root lambda 2, 2 minus lambda 2. Okay? So what you do is you let psi j be orthonormal basis for lambda 2, 2 minus lambda 2. Now, in practice, people don't have operators in infinite dimensions. They have matrices, basically. Right? So you diagonalize this matrix of measurements. And what do you need to check? So we have that y is in omega 1 if and only if the sum of this function in a product psi j now, because of the square root, I'll just have one lambda j. The eigenvalues of the square root, right, are the square roots of these. So if this is finite, in practice it's always finite. That's right. There are no infinite series in practice. So what they do, it's called a sampling method. Here's omega 2. Basically, you look at the level sets of this function of y. So this is all explicit. And where it grows like crazy, you say that's my obstacle. So they don't, right? So you just, by just watching where the level sets are. So to this extent, it's constructive. It's not the best way to find an obstacle, in my opinion. But it makes for a very elegant theorem.